Hey, beer nerds, welcome to the podcast. Who needs intro music when we can just get straight to the interview? Speaking today with Jeff Faith from Fair's Beer. And, well, you know, that was originally founded in the late 1800s. And no, Jeff isn't that old, but listen. And you can find out how he got involved with the beer that was, at one point in history, one of the most popular beers in America. And it's being brewed right here in my hometown of Louisville. Happy to be joined now in Louisville, Kentucky by Jeff Faith of Fair's Beer. Jeff, before we get into your portion of this story, just 50,000 foot view of Fair's, late 1800s, 1870-ish, Frank Fair, this guy, moves to Louisville, starts homebrewing. He's really good at it, has a knack for it, creates his Frank Fair's extra lager. It's a pre-prohibition lager. And it gained some notoriety. It became one of the most widely consumed beers in America. They had distribution out to the West Coast, I believe. And then Prohibition happens. Stops production, obviously.
Yeah.
Work kind of picks back up a little bit. And then in the mid-60s or so, Fair's just ceases to exist.
Yeah, that's pretty close. Yeah.
Yeah?
All right. That's pretty close.
Well, and now... thanks to you, and it's being brewed again here in Louisville at Akasha Brewing.
Yeah, and those guys are doing a great job.
So where do you fall into that story that I just told?
Oh, that's great. I don't even know. I was a home brewer for a few years. Entered some beer in the state fair, and I would hang around the homebrew club just a little bit. I don't tend to hang around clubs a whole lot, but
not a club guy.
I'd go brew in a couple of events, like over at Apocalypse for the dog event every fall. When Fall City came back and then Sterling came back, and I was like, man, that's cool that these guys are doing this.
These historic legacy brands are coming back.
Yeah, the historic part. And I know initially, I think they're doing great things now, but initially, they were brewing the beer in other places and shipping it in. And that's, money-wise, that makes sense. I mean, I totally get where they were coming from. But I was literally just having a beer with my buddy Rob, who used to work over at Goodwood. And we were talking, just about beer and history and the bringing back of old names. And suddenly I found myself on the... patent office trademark site, and I realized other people had tried to buy the Fair's name, and it was kind of tied up. But screwing around with that for 6 or 8 months, suddenly it became free, and I got my name into the trademark office for the rights to Fair's, and I screwed up the application, so then I redid it, talked to the patent office there, and the patent lawyers called me and we talked a lot, and I got everything straight, and suddenly I owned the rights to Fair's. But in the meantime, I'd read Conrad Selle's book, and they had translated old German newspapers from the 1880s. They had the basis for the recipe for Fair's XL right there in the book. But a little more talking to Conrad and some more history and digging into brewing books. And
so you pulled the recipe straight from a book, a photograph in a book.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah. And actually, like I said, Conrad Selle was a big help. We talked about what was available back then hops wise. But the book actually says, hey, this, it had so many pounds of hops per barrel. And it was 70% six row barley, and the rest was 30% rice. It's like, this is a pretty standard beer for the day. It wasn't anything unusual. It was a good lager. But I just kind of dug through the history, and then I made 5 gallons on my own, lagering literally with the in a 5 gallon plastic bucket, with that bucket sitting in another bucket of ice water, and I would just check it every day and add ice, as I needed, which is kind of funny when you think about the way the first 5 gallons came out. But I started sharing that 5 gallons with friends, a couple people in the industry, Joel from over at Goodwood, BBC. Mm-hmm. A couple of those guys were like, man, this is good beer. What is this? I said, well... this is Fair's XL, so it kind of it kind of started to take off a little bit right there, just in my mind, I guess. It took a few years to figure out the right way to make it happen.
Did you know about Fares before you read that book?
You know what? I knew of the name. I knew a little bit of the history, but I didn't really have an attachment to it, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know,
I mean, because you weren't drinking beers in like 1964.
right. You know, that's funny. I mean, I guess, you know, in 64, actually, you know, they stopped making Fares in Louisville. You know, they went out of business, but the name lived on up in Schaneling Brewery up in Cincinnati. They continued to make Fares XL and Kentucky Malt Liquor, which was a Fares brand. So they made those out of Cincinnati up into the 70s. And it even shows up in the movie Uncle Buck. So they were made a little bit of it in the 80s. And every now and then you see some cans out there with a barcode on the side and a staple tab, you know. For the can collectors, they know exactly how to date that stuff. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, that's in the 80s. But the story I've kind of heard was that, you know, Schaneling was kind of hurting. And they were like, man, what can we do? Maybe we can revive one of our old brands and stay in business. So I think that's where that happened and, you know, probably how it ended up in the movie Uncle Buck. But
so the beer itself is being brewed here at Akasha Brewing in Louisville.
Yeah.
How did that relationship come to be?
That's, you know, I, at the time, actually, when Akasha first opened, I actually had been looking at spaces. You know, I have a day job. I play music at night. I got way too much.
By the way, what is your day job? We
can
talk about that.
I can. I work on corporate jets for a living. I'm an airplane mechanic. And I work on some little airplanes for friends on the side. And then I play a lot of music in about five different bands at any one time. But I don't really have time to brew for a living. But I started looking for spaces, and I kind of liked the idea of what Apocalypse was doing. You know, at the time, they were only open on the weekends. You know, they would brew small batches, open up for the weekend, and I started looking for spaces. And I actually walked into Akasha to check it out when they, you know, right after they opened. And I'm losing the name. Guy used to own the homebrew store.
Paul.
Yeah, Paul was working here at the time. And Paul's like, hey, man, what's up with Fares? What are you doing? And it's like, well, you know, I'm looking for a space. But honestly, if I could find somebody like this, you know, these guys at Akasha, if I could find somebody that existed already, that was cool, that liked beer, somebody local that could brew it and would work with me, I'd love to do that. And, of course, you know, it's like, well, you know, we don't really have tank space here. It'd be fun to help, but we don't have tank space. And that's when I offered to buy a tank. It's like, hey, look, you know, at that time they had a 7-barrel system. I think it was the 7.5, you know, tanks were the biggest ones they had. And so I bought a 10-barrel fermenter, which helped the brewery out, I think, and helped Fares get started. You know, so that was the beginning of the relationship. Just, hey, look, you know, if you'll brew for me, I'll buy some equipment. You know, this, and you know, I just want it to exist in Louisville. I don't want to make it somewhere else. I want it to be made in Louisville, and it needs to be as close to what, you know, we think the original recipe was as we can.
And this is Fares Extra Lager.
Fares XL, yeah.
So what is XL?
That's a great question. It's so funny. I really don't know what is XL, because you see Extra Lager written sometimes on the old advertising or the cans and bottle labels. Does that mean it was lagered longer? I mean, the beer is actually lagered here. It's not filtered. Mm-hmm. It's in the tank for 7 to 8 weeks. Nobody does that anymore. So, I mean, I guess we could say it really is extra lagered.
Yeah. So, I mean, the beer is good. I mean, you know me. You see me drinking this stuff enough.
Oh, yeah.
But what I really do like about Fares is the history, too, and the story behind it. And I think the story of Fares is a story of Louisville. And pre-Prohibition, I mean, Louisville was one of the top beer cities in the country, and people don't know that. I mean, along with St.
Yeah.
Louis, Milwaukee, Cincinnati.
Well, yeah. You know, and the more I got into the whole Fares idea and start digging, you know, and then finding advertisements, newspaper articles, newspaper ads. I've got newspaper ads from 1917 for advertising Fares beer in Phoenix and San Francisco. You know, and I knew that it was, you know, it was always said it was the biggest brewery in the South. I mean, that's, I'd heard that, but to think that they were selling beer all the way to the West Coast just blows me away. And at one point, Frank Fair actually went to New Orleans and set up a brewery in New Orleans. And it was, I think it was the New Orleans Brewing Company or something simple like that. But that was Frank Fair made that happen. And I kind of wonder, you know, did he do that so that he could make Fairs there and ship it on out west? I mean, just, you know, maybe they were making their own beer, you know, under a different brand, but mm-hmm. was he making Fairs just so he could have it, you know, shipped out west, you know, easier? I'm not sure. But yeah, it's all interesting, the whole history and their unanswered, you know, lots of unanswered questions, I guess.
So going through the history of Fairs, did you get a sense of what the beer scene in Louisville was like at its time before Prohibition?
Yeah. And it's funny. There was actually a group called the Central Consumers Group, where a bunch of the the Central Consumers Group. They all joined together, and you know, before Prohibition, we didn't have the three-tier system. There weren't. They were, you know, the brewery might own the bars. Mm-hmm. So the guys in the Central Consumers Group, you know, they all got together. It was, you know, Fairs and Ertl's and Phoenix Brewery. I can't remember, Sin and Ackerman maybe. I mean, there were a bunch of breweries in town that were all part of the Central Consumers Group. But they just said, hey, cool, no problem. We'll buy up all the bars. You know, we own the beer. We own the bars. You know, we're distributing ourselves. We won't sell anybody else's beer in our bar. So they pretty much owned every bar in town. And it's funny, when Fall City came along, they were the underdog. They weren't part of the Central Consumers Group. You know, they were the little guy trying to fight the big, mean guys. And, you know, of course, Frank Fair was actually kind of ran the Central Consumers Group. So maybe, you know, maybe in a way somebody would say, you know, They were the big corporate guys of the time, you know, in Louisville. But
there were so many breweries back
then. There were, like, 50, 60 breweries or something at one point.
But now we have less than 20?
Is it? I'm not even sure. Yeah. I mean, I know it's growing. It's growing.
No, we're about to open 6 in the next 6 months.
That's amazing. It's amazing.
I believe. But
well, honestly, there are days I wish I would have opened my own place, just because I think it'd be cool, but I would be, we wouldn't have as much Fairs, and I would be worn out.
That's fair.
I love that Rick has done so much here for Fairs.
Akasha,
I mean,
yeah.
It's fun, yeah, Akasha.
So going back to Prohibition.
I'm sorry. Before Prohibition, all that stuff. It was a strange time, just because, I mean, there was a lot of money flowing. Between the bars and the breweries, and kind of locking other breweries out of certain bars, you know. So the big guys, you know, Ertl's, Fairs, they were kind of in control of the whole beer scene in Louisville.
Mm-hmm. Prohibition hits. A lot of these beverage companies, not just beer but whiskey too, they turn to other business ventures to stay afloat. I mean, Brown-Forman starts selling medicinal whiskey through Old Forester.
They were smart.
And so they survived. They were still making whiskey, just in a different way. What did Fairs do during that time?
You know, that's a great question. I'm trying to remember. I've read too much. It gets jumbled up. But I know some of the beer cellars were used for growing mushrooms at the time. They also made some sodas. I can't remember which part of that Fairs was doing.
I had read about ice.
Well, so, you know, and that's ice is an interesting thing with the Fairs history. That goes back to about 1890. The first ammonia compressors for the first refrigeration unit in Louisville was Frank Fairs. Frank Fair had
that is a random piece of trivia.
I know, isn't it strange? But you know, it's so funny. And there's actually in Conrad Selly's book, there's a photo of this big machine, you know, giant flywheel that's 10 feet high with ladders and, you know, stairs going around this thing. But it was a big ammonia compressor. So they were able to make ice, and they actually supplied the whole city with ice. And, you know, before that, you know, the beer cellars around here, they would cut ice from the lakes when they were frozen in the winter, and then they would store those in the cellars and you know, packed with straw, you know, whatever. It was like just literally big ice boxes underground. But once Frank Fair got this big ice machine, he was able to make ice all year round. It made, you know, lagers a whole lot easier to do, and he was literally supplying the whole city with ice at one point.
Wow.
Yeah.
So less than a year ago, Fair's gets canned for the first time since 1964.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess, but it was on draft here at Akasha before then. But what was that experience like for you? Gets to see that in six packs.
Well, I tell you, you know, it's funny. We're operating on a pretty small budget, so you know, I was literally back there. I mean, I personally labeled. I mean, we're not buying pre-printed cans, so you know, we buy blank cans and we put labels on the cans. But I personally labeled every single can. You know, 3,500 cans is on a pallet, but I personally labeled all of those. And then Spencer and Nate and I and Rick, you know, it takes three of us, and four is nice, but it takes three of us to kind of run the very small canning line that we have. You know, it fills two cans at once and seams one can at a time. It's very labor intensive, but it's really cool that we were able to do that. And I think the first run we canned 28 cases, or was it less than that? Was it 18 cases? I can't remember. It was a very small run, and we were just trying to figure things out. But
if I remember, full disclosure, I worked here at the time.
Oh yeah,
so I was behind the bar. If I'm remembering right, sold out in one day.
Yeah, in about 2.5 hours. Yeah. 2.5 hours, which is cool. I had friends sending me texts, you know, like, "Hey man, can you save me a case?" And like, I just can't even respond anymore. Nobody is getting. I'm not saving anything for anybody. If you want beer, come buy it. But we're still using the same canning system, but we've improved I guess it's faster. It's more streamlined.
Okay.
We're moving faster. But yeah, it's still very manual. It put visions in my head of one of my dreams. Something I told my friend Kevin Gibson, you know, a few years ago when I first started this. He's like, you know, where do you see Fairs, or what do you want to see for Fairs? And it's like, dude, I want to see it in every bowling alley and gas station in town. You know, I'd like to see people drinking cans of Fairs. You know,
bowling alley beer.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's to me, it's perfect. It's, you know, it goes good with pizza, bowling, you know. Cutting the grass. I mean, it's just a good classic lager. But yeah, it was cool to see that happen, and it just kind of pushes that dream of seeing it in bowling alleys, or you know, seeing it on the gas station shelf, or in, you know, gas station coolers.
Well, into that point, Fairs on Draft is not just available. I mean, it's not only at Akasha. You can find it in other spots in town.
Yeah, it's from what I understand, and you would think I'd be better at this, at understanding this. I know it's in about 25 places around the state, and I hear from like Scott over at Goodwood. You know, when he's out running around the state, he's always like, "Man, I see your beer everywhere." You know, it's out there. I don't always know, and every now and then I'll get a message from somebody. They're like, "Hey, I'm drinking Affairs at the Post." I'm like, "Oh, absolutely. Sweet, you know, yeah. Cool."
So I always get Banquet at the Post, except when I see Fairs.
That's all. Well, you know, that's funny. Banquet's one of my go-tos. It's a good, solid. It's classic. You know,
it's one of the best.
Yeah.
So let's say you're at a bar at an account that sells Fairs on Draft. Have you ever just had an old guy sit down next to you, and then all of a sudden, like, kind of perk up when he sees that Fairs is on tap?
Come on, have I ever? No, that happens all the time.
So what do they say? What do these old guys who used to drink this beer say? Then now it's back.
Well, you know, it's amazing because I mean, I hear stories about you know, like, "Oh my God, I haven't had this since I stole it out of my dad's garage in the '60s," you know, or "My grandfather used to let me take a sip of his beer and it tastes just like that." But it's funny how. I can't imagine remembering the flavor for that long, but there are guys that are saying, "Man, this tastes just like what I remember." You know, it's amazing to me that they get excited about it. I stopped in the Akasha about a week ago, and there was an older couple sitting at the bar, and you know, I kind of walked in. I don't think there was anybody else around. It was early on a Sunday, but I walked in and. and ordered a Fares, and they're like, hey, this couple over here came in just for Fares. And I hear that all the time, like, you know, hey, these people are here, they just came in just for Fares. And I usually go chat with them a little bit, but these guys, it was the same story. This lady's was it her dad, or I'm sorry, her uncle or something, used to work for one of the breweries, you know, years and years ago, but just remembers, you know, the name and her parents drinking it. You know, it was just like, you know, just the history. I mean, everybody seems to remember or know somebody that worked at the brewery, or somebody's grandfather drank the beer. I mean, mm-hmm. it's really cool. But I've seen guys get tears in their eyes when they're taking a sip, and it's really it's sweet. Yeah,
that's amazing, actually. A brand that exists that long, you start seeing some memorabilia pop up, signage in it.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, like, you travel a little bit for work. Do you ever see it out and about? How about this? Have you ever gone out of your way, traveled to pick something up?
That's a great question. I guess I have. I've had a lot of stuff shipped in. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we have an amazing thing with things like eBay.
Yeah.
But
and you collect this stuff too, obviously.
I do. I have a museum of stuff. I mean, sometimes I'm like, I don't even, what am I doing with all this?
But we got to get you an exhibit at Fraser.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, it's funny you say that, the Fraser thing. It's a little off track here, but
totally, yeah.
But a couple years ago, I guess 2 years ago, I got a Facebook message from somebody just randomly, and they're like, hey, I've got Frank Fair's desk. Would you like to buy it? And I'm thinking, how do you know? I mean, there's no way you know this is Frank Fair's desk. I mean, I said, man, I don't know that I can afford it. And my thought was, well, this is probably somebody that just thinks, hey, this guy's got a bunch of money and is buying Frank Fair stuff. I'm like, cool. But I said, look, I might be interested. You know, if you send me some photos, I'd love to see what it is you have. And he said, well, I got some other stuff too. You know, so he sends me this photo of a desk, and you know, it looks like something from the 50s or 60s. And I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe it could be something with Frank Jr. You know, which he was running the brewery after his dad died and up in, you know, to the end. But they send me a photo, and I see this desk. I'm like, okay, that's cool. And hey, there's a photo of Frank Jr. and his wife, and there's a Fares bottle. And a couple of other things, and I notice on the desk is this little, about a 4-inch bronze medal in a leather case, and it got my attention, and it's something I knew about but had never seen. Couldn't believe one even existed, but Frank Fair actually won the best, it was actually the best display of beer at the Southern Exposition for every year that the Southern Exposition was around. And I zoom in on this photo, and it says Southern Exposition. And I'm like, oh, like my heart was racing. Like, oh, my God, there's no way. You know, these people have a medal from the Southern Exposition. And I sent him a message back, and I said, look, any idea what you want for all that stuff? I mean, I'll just take it all. whatever.
So you go from, I don't know if I even want that desk,
yeah,
to I want everything in
the
room.
I'll just take it all. I'll be right over. Let me grab my truck. But, yeah, I went over, and it turns out that their dad – or their parents were friends of Frank Jr. and his wife. So when Frank Jr. died, they called this couple up, and they said, hey, we want you to have a couple of things if you're interested. And they went over and gave them the desk and the medal and a couple of other things. And they were just cleaning out this lady's house that was going into a nursing home, and they needed the space. And they're like, hey, you know, we heard about you, and we thought you might be interested, and we could use a little bit of money. I was like, yeah, cool, done. But so back to the Fraser Museum, I get this thing, and it's the first place medal for the Southern Exposition for Frank Fair for the first year of the Southern Exposition.
And that's late 1800s again, right?
1883.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Jesus.
1883. So, you know, I'm just like, holy cow, I have this thing in my hand. I mean, unbelievable. So I immediately sent a text to the two guys I knew over at the Fraser Museum, the curator and hey, can we cuss on this thing? But it was funny because their response was just like, holy cow, this is a state treasure. How did you find this thing? And the next question was, and you're sending this photo to us because you're going to let us borrow that, right? Like, yeah. So it was like, I think I had the medal for maybe a week and a half. And the guys from the Fraser came over and picked it up.
So
they've had it for a while, along with a couple of they've got a couple of signs or trays or something. And they had some other things that they brought back to me after their Prohibition exhibit when they picked that stuff up. But yeah, it's kind of neat that the Fraser.
I never heard that story before. Amazing.
It's weird. And so the desk, I've got Frank Jr.'s desk, the last desk that was in his house before he died. And this sounds funny, but when I said I actually labeled all those cans, I've got a very manual labeling machine, like a hand crank with a roll of labels on it. I actually clamp it to Frank Jr.'s desk to put the labels on. So,
that's great.
I feel like there's a little, grabbing hold of a little history there somehow.
So not only do you like the beer, you've also seemed to kind of attached your
obsessed.
it's also the family name that you can appreciate more than just like the beer and the brand. Are there descendants, Frank Fair descendants in the area?
There are. And
do you have a relationship with them?
I wouldn't say relationship, but I get messages from them every now and then. And usually, we've had birthday parties here. For like when we first released the beer, it was in December. And so the next year we had a party here at Akasha for the 1 year anniversary of the new release. And then, last year it kind of hit me. I was like, wait a minute, when's Frank Fair, when was he born? And he was actually born, the last day of March. So the end of March. So it was like, so last year we just had a party on Frank Fair's birthday. It's like that, that's kind of fitting. So hopefully we'll do the same. Well, I mean, the plan is to do the same thing again this year, you know? So,
what do you think, kind of just a broader question, I guess, but what do you think the Louisville beer community can do to get us back to a place as a beer city to where we were before Prohibition?
That's an interesting thing. I don't know that it'll ever be exactly like that again. We're not going to be selling fares in San Francisco, I'm pretty sure. Guys over at Fall City and Against the Grain, I go to Kansas a lot for work, and there's one of my favorite places out there for beer. I always go in and buy beer when I'm there, and I walk into Rob's World of Beer, and hey, there's Against the Grain beer in Goodwood sitting on the shelf now. They're getting out there. I mean, it's really cool that they've got that distribution, and the ability to make that happen. It's growing. It's not fast, but it's growing.
And I think there's something to be said about the breweries that are here too. I mean, Against the Grain has a secondary brewery in Japan.
That's crazy.
Monic. I was in Amsterdam about a year ago, and I walked into this bottle shop. Yeah. And I saw a Monic beer there. It was due to a collaboration with another beer there in the Netherlands. But just seeing a Louisville, Kentucky brewery bottle, like label.
Yeah.
That's cool. So we are on the right track, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that it's ever going to be quite like it was, but.
Right. I think we need more breweries in the West End.
Yeah.
We're getting shipping port that's opening up in the next year or so.
Yeah, but it used to be. I mean, and so thinking back, to these old guys that I run into all the time. My neighbor Norman, cool dude. But he always talked about it, and I've heard the story from other guys. But he's like, man, when I was a kid, my dad would hand me a quarter, and I'd grab the bucket, and I'd walk down to the brewery, and it's like, you'd walk down to the brewery and get a bucket of beer. And he said they had pretzels at the brewery, too. So he said, I'd get a pretzel, and I'd dip that pretzel in the beer all the way back home, and eat the pretzel. And then we'd sit down, and that was, we had that beer with dinner. Like, that was just a normal thing. Hank Williams Sr. had a song called My Bucket's Got a Hole in It. I can't get no beer,
I didn't realize that was the connection.
Yeah. It's funny to think about. That was the growler of the day. Everybody just went down to the local brewery. And can you imagine, like, if every neighborhood had a brewery?
Yeah.
And, that's if you look, a little bit of the history of this area, like you said, with the breweries, I mean, every brewery, there were breweries all over the place. Yeah. I mean, they're everywhere. Not all of them were making lagers or pilsners, because it took a little time and temperature control was a little harder to deal with.
Well, what they were making were Kentucky Commons.
Kentucky Commons, exactly. Or porters. You know, porters and commons and stouts, and, you know, they were making ales. And Kentucky Commons, everybody in town made a Kentucky Commons.
One of two beers that are indigenous to the United States.
Exactly, yeah,
California,
yeah.
California Common and Kentucky Common.
Yeah, California Common, yeah. Fritz Maytag brought back, what is that? I can come up with Fritz's name, and I can't think of the Anchor Steam.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Anchor Steam. And that's a great beer, man. And you know, that was that just happened because of, like, the Germans moved out there. They're making their regular recipe, but they couldn't cool it down enough. So it ended up with a little fruitier, you know, flavor, a little bit different, you know.
So, obviously, Fares Brewing had a lot of different beers.
But there were about 8 different styles, yeah.
Any plans to bring those other styles back?
Well, it's funny. I was just talking to Rick and Spencer about this. Yeah, we'd like to have a Kentucky Common within the next month. So maybe, you know, for the Frank Fares birthday here at the end of March, maybe do a small batch of Common.
Have you ever personally made that recipe at home?
I have. And so, the only recipe that I've got any kind of basis for Fares is actually, you know, the Fares XL. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important for the Fares brands to stick to traditional recipes. And I don't need to have anything weird in the beer or anything modern, you know. Let's use old hops and let's make it the way they used to make it. So,
speaking of which, hold on. Last night for Valentine's Day.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Akasha wants to do some fun stuff, and they had an event called Very Hot Valentine's Day, and they had hot sauce and hot wings, and they purposefully wanted to do a couple different beers with spices and jalapenos in it, and.
And glitter.
They made a beer that might offend you.
Well, you know, I'm not offended by it. Not even a little bit.
But just to be clear, like it's made with Fares.
Yeah.
It is dyed red. There's glitter in it and arbol peppers.
Yes.
And
it's really pretty.
Spicy, and it's a pretty beer. But I look at that, I'm just like, that's not Fares.
Yeah, it kind of throws me a little bit. But but yeah, I'm not offended by it at all. But it is a funny thing when I think about, like, a common recipe. I've mentioned Conrad Selle a few times with the guy that wrote the book that I love so much. But Conrad turned me on to a book from 1903 called The Brewing, Malting, and Auxiliary Trades, and it was a literally a instruction book that was printed in 03, and it's a really great example of what was going on at the turn of the century. And they talk about recipes and techniques and equipment. And when you go in there, there's a very short section where they discuss the Kentucky Common. So, you know, historically, I feel like it's right on, but they talk about the malt and the color and the alcohol. And I actually built a recipe from that, you know, and it's something I've brewed at home for several years. I haven't brewed it in a while, but when friends would come over and they're always like, hey, what's on tap? With this beer, I always told people, drink it, but like, or pour it, but don't look at it. Just take a sip first, because some people would take would pour it and see the color. I mean, it's a dark brown beer. I mean, it looks dark. But Kentucky Common is light, crisp, refreshing. I mean, it's just got a little bit of dark malts for color, not flavor. You know, it's a delicious beer, but you know, it's made with corn, and you know, because Frank Fair used 6-row barley, my recipe always uses 6-row barley. I know it drives some of the guys crazy because it's a little harder to get, but I think it makes a difference in the flavor. So.
So 5 years from now, 2025, where do you see this brand?
Oh, man. In every bowling alley and gas station in town. That would be the greatest. I know that sounds funny, but yeah, it's just, I'd love to see it in cans, in more cans. Yeah. We need to brew a bigger quantity. And it's just going to, you know, things are growing at a nice rate. I'm not going to rush anything, but I need to win the lottery first before before the size of the brewery increases. And even if I won the lottery, I would just I would invest into Akasha here, and we'd just make this whole thing a little bit bigger, you know, or a secondary brew house, you know, a production house would be awesome. But but yeah, you know, I there's a lot of money involved in those big canning lines and a bigger brewing system. And
I meant to talk about this like minutes ago, but yeah. Frank Fair had two brewery locations here in Louisville, right?
Yeah, yeah. So if you know where First Quality or First Link Supermarkets, that's where they used to be down here between Preston and Jackson. Yeah, yeah.
Green Street.
It was Green Street. Yeah, years ago, and then later it was Fair Avenue. But actually, Frank Fair started working at a brewery right there, and worked there for about a year, and then bought it, and that became Frank Fair's brewery. That place burned in the 1890s, 1880s.
Bloody Monday,
No, it wasn't, because it was just a brewery fire.
Okay,
but they moved across the street where Dosker Manor is now. But the entire city block became Frank Fair's brewery number one. Mm-hmm. And that's probably about the time Fair Avenue, instead of Green Street, they decided it was Fair Avenue. That brewery was the one that was there till 64. And there was another brewery that went out of business before Prohibition. And that's over on Logan Street. Mm-hmm. And that big, tall building that everybody sees, it's kind of rough. Yeah. That became Frank Fair's brewery number two. Yeah. So, cold storage and brewery, yeah.
So this is all to say that in 5 years, maybe there's a production house.
That would be great. That would be great. You know what's funny? I actually talked to a friend of mine, a fellow musician up in Indiana that works for a distributor, and I was talking to him about, you know, some Indiana distribution. So we're going to start working together soon, I think, and try to get a little more going on up there. Just baby steps. I just got another pallet of cans, which doesn't sound like anything for, the big breweries. But yeah, you know, label another pallet of cans, and we're going to keep trying to get more cans out there. And just keep making beer. I'd love to say it was going to be bigger. I think it will be, but I'm not sure what it's going to take yet.
That's fair.
Well, I do know what it's going to take, a whole bunch of money.
Yeah, so if you're out there listening and you'd like to donate to the Frank Fair Fund.
Yeah, right.
Jeff, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, man.